looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
The task of the archaeologist, the biblical archaeologist, is a dirty one. It is difficult, and it's also apparently filled with difficult decisions to make. Sometimes you're just searching and you find nothing, and sometimes there's something accidentally found, and sometimes you find something of real biblical significance. The headline reads, Church of the Apostles discovered near the Sea of Galilee, archaeologists say, and if you read down, you'll see that it's a church that was built probably sometime in the 4th century. That's a long time from the New Testament era. But the real question is, what may lie underneath that church? Joining us to talk about the discovery of a Byzantine church in the ancient town of Bethsaida, Dr. Craig Evans. He's Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, and author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Why is the discovery of a Byzantine-era church something that, you know, this time runs from about middle 4th century for about another 1,000 years, why is that significant for New Testament archaeology?
Well, it's because, Todd, sometimes these early Byzantine churches are built right on top of what everybody knew was much older, an older site. We see the same thing at Capernaum, where there was a Byzantine church built on top of what was believed to be Peter's house. And then here, this is a Byzantine church built on what was believed to have been Bethsaida, the place where Simon Peter and Andrew and also Philip, another disciple, at least three of Jesus' disciples came from. So it's an important spot. And what happens is, just because we have a Byzantine church there, doesn't mean we automatically accept it. We dig underneath and see what's there. And in this particular case, 1st century BC, 1st century AD, ruins have been found. So it is definitely in the running. It could be the correct site for the New Testament town of Bethsaida.
Why are these things sometimes so very difficult to locate, even the towns themselves difficult to locate?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. A lot of towns are difficult to locate. In fact, we have found just up the hill from Magdala on the northwest shore, the Sea of Galilee, there's an unknown town. We actually have found the remains of what had been a small city, and we don't even know what it is. So sometimes it's the other way around. It's not like you have a tourist guide left behind that is detailed. So we just don't always know. We knew Bethsaida was at the north end of the Sea of Galilee, and for almost 30 years, an archaeological team has been working up the side of the hill, up above Steve Notley's site that we're talking about right now, and they've said that this location is Bethsaida. And see, they originally said that the site that's in the news today, Steve Notley and Moti Aviam have been working at, that it was Byzantine and no earlier, and so it was not old enough. But in last year and this year, ongoing digs have found turn-of-the-era pottery and other remains. So that's why I said a moment ago, this is a site that now is definitely in the running. The advantage it has, Todd, is it's at the water's edge, and so boats would have been tied up there. But in my own view, both teams of archaeologists could be correct. In other words, when the Tetrarch Philip, son of Herod the Great, in the year 30, announced that the village of Bethsaida would be upgraded to city status, he may well have included the hill that rises up to the north behind Bethsaida. And it would have been a hill on which some grand buildings could have been built, like a temple in honor of Emperor Augustus's widow who had recently died and everybody wanted to make a goddess out of her. So it could be that both sites are correct, but the original older fishing village at the water's edge is where Steve Notley and Moti Avium are now working and are making important discoveries.
How did the earliest Christians, how did they come into the practice of saying, well, here is a site associated with perhaps Peter and Andrew as birthplace. Let's figure out where they live and build a church on top.
Well, they don't just show up and at random start looking around for some old ruins. There is what I call continuity of village memory. There were lots of Christians living in what's today Israel and Palestine. The Islamic conquest had not yet occurred. These populations had not been displaced. Even though the Jewish people have fought three bitter wars with Rome, the first one that resulted in the destruction of the Jerusalem temple, the second one mostly in North Africa, and the third one, the Bar Kokhba revolt in the early second century in the land of Israel. Despite those wars and the tremendous problems it created and population dislocations and so on, you still had old villages where people lived generation after generation, and so you get this continuity of village memory. And so when Queen Helena shows up, Constantine's mother shows up in the early 4th century, the locals know where these things are happening because they've been living there. They say, look, this is what my grandfather told me, and this is what his grandfather told him. Well, they only had to go back about 2.5, not quite 3 centuries, and they go right back to the very beginning of the church, to where Jesus lived and walked and ministered and where his disciples lived, as the early church got underway. So these Byzantine sites, that's why they're important. They're not random guesses where Jesus or where the disciples might have lived, but they have the locals who have been living there the whole time who say, this is the very place. It doesn't necessarily guarantee that it's right every time, but it gives it a lot of credibility.
What is the nature of the structure uncovered here? If this is Bethsaida at Bethsaida, what did they actually find there?
Well, what they have found, the remains of a very old church with some mosaics on the floor. Of course, some of that's a guarded secret. They're not going to let it out yet. I've actually written a small article related to it on some of the scripture quotations that have been found. Sometimes when a church like this is found, the church itself goes through a series of stages as the centuries go by. The churches get rebuilt and expanded and altered and modified. And what the archaeologists are looking for are these different layers, getting back to when the church was first built, its oldest layer. But what they've also found beneath it are the remains of a village that dates back to the first century A.D. and even earlier. There's evidence that indeed it was a fishing village. And so you end up with stone anchors and pieces of iron that probably related to hooks and spears, lead weights used for the nets and things like that. I think there's pretty substantial evidence now that this was a village in the time of Jesus, in the time of his disciples, and it became revered very early on with this church, and it remained a very holy spot for a long time until later with the Islamic conquest.
You had mentioned that this is a good candidate because it's on the water's edge. Is it on the current water's edge, or is it on the then first century water's edge? Because I know that there are some towns that have been difficult to locate because of the changing coast of the Sea of Galilee.
Well, you're quite correct. And in fact, there have been two changes, both of them involving topography. What you just said, the shoreline has been extended further south, and so this village is not right on the water's edge today. But geological study has indicated that 2,000 years ago, it was on the water's edge. The other complicating factor is that there was an earthquake in the 4th century that temporarily dammed up the Jordan River. The Jordan River flows into the top, the north end of the Sea of Galilee, and then outflows at the south end. And that's the Jordan that most people are familiar with that goes all the way down to the Dead Sea. But the north end where the Jordan flows into the Sea of Galilee was blocked up. It was dammed up. And then there was a massive mudslide that broke up this natural-made dam from the earthquake. And, of course, that created a huge change tons and tons of debris came down, covered what would have been the original site of Bethsaida, pushed the shoreline further south. And so that complicated things, too. And, of course, when this mudslide came from the top, it brought down artifacts, pottery, and confused the stratigraphy. It confused the dating. And that's why this Byzantine location for decades had been considered the wrong location. And so the other team working further up the hill, they kept saying, hey, we're digging up the real Bethsaida. But Steve Notley, in the last 2 years or so, along with Moti Aviam, they've been successful in digging down to show that the artifacts, the pottery, and other things that they found do belong to that spot and were not washed down from up above. And so they really are looking at a first century village. It is on the water's edge, so it's a great candidate as Bethsaida. But both sides, neither side has found an inscription that confirms that. So there's nothing that's been found, you know, like an ostracon where the name Bethsaida is inked on it, or an inscribed, you know, inscription in stone. Nobody has found that. That would be the smoking gun, I think, and that would settle it if somebody makes that discovery.
Two final questions for you. What did that Islamic conquest or series of conquests do to a lot of these sites, or even perhaps a site like this?
Well, you know, it unfortunately destroyed them. In some cases, you know, a Christian church or a Jewish synagogue is converted into a mosque, but in a lot of cases, they were just plain destroyed, leveled, and that was the end of it. And so, but the main thing is that it breaks the village continuity. If the people are displaced and they're just not there anymore, that's how you get this amnesia. That's how you lose the memory, and you're not sure, is this the right spot? Because there's been a break in continuity, and then a people moves in and lives there, and they're from a different faith tradition altogether. They don't have those old memories. There are villages in Israel that are, you know, they're part of the West Bank, they're Palestinian, they're Muslim, and they have names, and we recognize in their names that seems to be the Arabic equivalent of an ancient biblical name. So even some of these newer names give away the fact that there is a link with the biblical past.
When they find a church like this, as they have here in this site, how do they explore what is underneath that without destroying the site above? That's just kind of a technical question.
Well, yeah, and it's a good question. And sometimes the archaeologist, well, the archaeologist is the one that makes that decision, and it's a hard decision to make. I have seen that, like where I was digging at Mount Zion with Shimon Gibson, and here was a mosaic floor. We were looking at it, and the mosaic floor was dated to only about 1000 A.D., and Shimon wanted to get underneath it. So he took photographs, we took samples, and then they just removed it, you know, and all of the little carved pieces of stone and everything got picked up and put in a box, and then we dug underneath. Now, sometimes what you can do, if you can preserve the best part of the preserved mosaic floor and say, look, we're going to leave that, but right beside it, we're going to dig down. And that really is best. If you can picture this in your mind, it looks like a staircase where the highest end of the staircase is the most recent, and then each step down, we're going down a few centuries so that we can go all the way back to the first century and maybe all the way back into Old Testament times. And that way you've preserved a sample of each layer. But boy, I'll tell you, it's just guesswork, because you could end up digging through something that is really neat, but it's Byzantine and you want to get underneath it because you want to go all the way back to the time of Herod or all the way back to the time of the Old Testament itself. And you just can't help but destroy things on the way down. And that's why there are such strict rules. I've heard scholars say, well, you know, it's, you get one bite at the apple, you get one kick at the can, because you destroy the place, in effect. So you have to take photos, you have to take measurements, you have to do a very careful job, because nobody can come back later and dig the same spot. It's all been dug up. So there's no second chance. You want to do it right the first time.
With about 20 seconds, how confident are you in this particular site as it's being reported?
You put me in an awkward position. I have good friends that argue for both sites, And I've visited both, and I know the top site, the higher site, best. I have to say, in hearing Steve Notley lecture on this just 2 months ago here in Houston, I am starting to tilt in his direction. And so I'm pretty close to being convinced that he's got the right place.
Dr. Craig Evans is Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, and author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. You'll find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click On Demand Archives. Dr. Evans, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
On the other side of the break, it is This Week in Pop Christianity with Pastor Chris Roseborough. We will be listening to what he says is classic narcissism from Stephen Furtick of Elevation Church.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is the new Growing in Faith Bible. It's written for children, grandchildren, and godchildren, ages 8 through 10. The Growing in Faith Bible contains more than 100 Bible stories with beautiful, engaging pictures. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. The Growing in Faith Bible, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
More topics, more guests, more Jesus. You're listening to Issues Etc.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's Word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all.